Siren Radio.
So, what do we wait for now, Ben? What's the important sort of aspect that the entire globe is keen to find out as far as the weather for Lincoln is concerned?
Well, the weather.
For Lincoln, from Gabriella Gibraltar. Gabriella, that is your cue.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, and it will be a day of thick cloud with a gentle breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And you have a choice of four fine folk to actually chat to, Gabriella, on this wonderful, awesome Thursday, which, of course, is Thanksgiving Day in certain parts of the land, particularly North America. So happy Thanksgiving, as we've actually moved over from that perspective. I suspect Phil Linus is too busy celebrating or still rehearsing for his Sunday show and his birthday show as well. But who would you like to speak to, Gabriella? Would it be Ben Lewis? Would it be Emma Street? Would it be Abigail LeMay? Or would it be Rory McGowan? Who do you wish to chat to this morning?
I feel like all of them.
I know, exactly. It's
spoiled
for choice.
I'm not talking to
exactly.
The rest of you today.
Yeah, but you know, whatever you make a selection, please.
We can talk a bit about.
Let's talk Canada. Let's move Abigail in straight away, because after all,
the usual in Canada.
Exactly. Well, how does Canada compare with the UK, and how long have you been with us, and so on?
Okay, so I got here in September, mid-September, so it's only been a couple of months, but it's not too different from Canada. One thing that was a shock to me when I got here was that you guys don't keep your eggs in the fridge. That was shocking to me for some reason.
I keep mine in the fridge.
Yeah, I keep mine in the fridge too, but you don't find them in the fridge. It's in the grocery store.
Gabriella?
Oh, right, in the shop. Yeah.
Otherwise, though, it's really just the driving that's different. I can't think of anything else.
Accent?
No.
Money?
Yes, of course.
Those are quite obvious. So whereabouts in Canada did you come from?
I'm from Ontario. So I was born and raised in Niagara, about 20 minutes from Niagara Falls. And then for university, 2 years ago, I moved to Toronto.
Splendid. And as you actually mentioned, Toronto, who should arrive but our international communications officer extraordinaire, the awesome Ellie Sample, who's just about to gear up in all sorts of ways. She's at the moment settling down. You'd be pleased to know, Gabriella, that she's actually sort of safely in the studio. She's now ensconced. Ben will be providing her with a set of headphones to ensure she can communicate effectively with the world. And I will also say, well done, Ellie Sample, on another outrageously wonderful event with respect to Carol Ann Duffy recently. And, of course, the wonderful Armistice collection of poetry, which I have, and you've brought along as well. Well, wow, this is fantastic. This is a gift that keeps on giving. The Great War, isn't it, really? I mean, in so many ways. It's almost as though we could thank the Kaiser here and now for actually sort of being responsible for this text at this time.
Might be going a bit far.
You think so?
I did bring one for you, though, and I also brought an autograph one for your listeners.
Wow.
So, one of the copies of the book, autographed by Carol Ann Duffy, M.T.S. Mm-hmm. Darker, and our very own Jason Whittaker. Mm-hmm. So I thought you could do a clever giveaway on this morning's show.
Oh, wow. We will do that. We will indeed look to a clever... When you say clever giveaway, I mean, obviously, we don't want to be seen as elitist here in some sort of academic routine. I mean, Gabrielle's in the midst of her interview with Abigail here about the joys of Canada, etc. So we will peruse that. And I've got one on each hand now. It's extraordinarily wonderful. Carry on with the interview, please, Gabriella. You're doing very well.
So how do Canadian Thanksgivings differ from American ones? Do they have different things to do?
I think the only difference is the importance of football. Well, I don't know really what...
Really?
I don't mean soccer.
No,
football.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, like American football.
Yes.
It's a rugby with pads, let's face it.
Basically, yes. But that's the only difference I can think of that's really prominent, other than the dates, because in Canada, ours is in November, so...
Oh. One's in October, one's in November. Again, insightful stuff. But
so you already had those like ages ago.
Yes, I actually did. We had a turkey over here to celebrate me and my other Canadian roommate.
So the university has actually put the Canadians in one kind of little area.
Actually, in one area.
So it's some sort of quarantine thing.
School was doing so well. They climbed the ratings, I guess, of best schools to apply to or best schools to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So they had run out of accommodation spots to give us. So me and my roommate, in fear of not getting a space in accommodation, had to look for our own flat.
Oh.
So we found our own. So it's just the two of us staying together.
Right, right. Oh, that's nice to see a little colony of Canadians is going to be based within Lincoln. It's wonderful stuff. Gabriella, what is the state of consciousness of Frodo, please?
Well, I think he's just probably asleep right now. He didn't want to wake up this morning, but food perked him up.
Isn't that always the way? You know, you don't want to wake up. Food will perk you up from that point. It's the energy side of things.
But I didn't want to wake up this morning either, so we were both just as bad.
Well, don't worry. We've got Stephanie Romaszewski, our sleep physiologist, coming up in a few seconds to actually explain how to... Yeah, I can't believe... I mean, Abigail, can you imagine anybody actually oversleeping and missing an entire show and a seminar, you know, just because they can't wake up? Can you believe that, you know?
I can't.
It's difficult to coordinate. It's so many. I mean, it's very strange. Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella, please?
So, Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have, thank you.
And will you be coming back again?
Yeah, I will, next week.
Oh, well, that's absolutely brilliant.
Got a lot of things to say.
And now it's fair to say, if you're a member of the human species, and we hope you are, that's why you tuned into Siren Radio, sleep is one of those key things that really is fairly critical. Ellie, would you agree to sleep even though
you know I don't sleep well. I woke up this morning, 2 o'clock, dog's out of my head.
Was it excitement at actually being back on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
I was really, really excited about coming and talking about the fantastic University of Lincoln, where we all love to be. But I think it was really the dog, and then after that, I just didn't go back to sleep till about 5 o'clock.
Oh, dear. Rory, I mean, did your cadet training sort of benefit you in terms of sleep at all, or is it cases of no? I'm up at 3 a.m. always to do at least 5,000 press-ups.
Well, actually, I've been an early morning lark, so they say, ever since I was a kid, because I used to get woken up by my dad thumping down the stairs
really?
And walk downstairs to go to work. and so I got conditioned from an early age, Alex.
Conditioned from early age. Emma, what's your particular sort of sleep-based thing? Because obviously last week you were in London and so on. How do you find the sleeping scenario?
I think I'm getting better with my sleep now, I think, but I still wake up in the middle of the night. I think it was about 1 a.m. I woke up for about an hour before I drifted back to sleep.
And the shift from Canada to Britain, does it impact on sleep at all, Abigail? And I won't mention, obviously, that we were expecting you last week, but obviously you were in the land of Nod.
Yeah, definitely. My sleep schedule is all over the place. I don't think I've gone to bed before 2 a.m. once since I've come here.
Right. Abigail,
I'm having such a good time. I want to do what she's doing.
I've made a decision. Stephanie Romaszewski, you've heard from four of the fine folk here. You've obviously spoken to Ben at length with respect to the sequence. So whom do you think needs your advice more when, as in the words of Sleepyhead Clinic, your very own routine, why I do what I do, an interview with Stephanie Romaszewski, the latest Facebook post. But Stephanie, any thoughts for Abigail and this Canadian shift in time and so on?
I think the best thing to mention at this point is that everyone's entirely normal, and that it's so normal after things like that to not sleep well. But I think we panic really quickly and worry about it. But our bodies aren't supposed to be able to shift from one time zone to another and just be fine straight away. So I guess the other thing that I would mention is, someone mentioned it, like being conditioned. You can literally be conditioned to any kind of sleep pattern. And it's important that we understand that, because then you sort of start to see how your own behavior can affect your sleep. And that's good too, because I think sometimes we think it's completely out of our control. But for example, when I guess a new time zone means, I don't know, you're going to bed like not any time before two, I try to figure out, okay, what am I doing before I go to bed? Not because it directly affects sleep, but because it might perpetuate the sleep problem. So, you know, if you're inclined to feel like you're not going to feel sleepy before two, then you're more likely to do stuff that you would do during the day because you feel awake. And when you feel awake, you're like, oh, well, I might as well do stuff. Like, I might do, you know, most people will sort of perpetuate the problem by almost like, because they feel alert, they then do the activities that, you know, they can do when they're alert. And of course, that makes it sort of more of a set in stone type of routine. Whereas if we were to try and shift it, so I would argue get up early, get up on a sort of English schedule, for example, like 7 a.m., even if you're going to bed at 2, which sounds awful in the first instance. But actually, after a while, especially if you're not nodding off, it's probably the quickest way, especially if you can get lots of light on an English day, so, you know, first thing on our mornings, and eating at regular times. Those are the two things that would be most influential to shift you quicker. But unfortunately, if you want to fix stuff like that, it's usually short-term pain for long-term gain. So you feel rubbish to start with, and then you feel better. But most of us will look for that short-term fix. You know, how can I just feel better now? Is it that I need to have a nap or something? And that's perfectly fine too, as long as we manage our expectations. Actually, because I've done that, this little cycle that's going on here might just be a bit perpetuated. But I'm cool with that, because you know what? I wanted to sleep, and that's okay.
Yes, definitely. There are times where, you know, obviously in the business of education, academia, and I look around the group and I think, yeah, it's all right. They're just catching up on our sleep, basically. That's all. They're just sort of going slightly unconscious for the whole sort of thing. Or maybe they're zoning out. Maybe they're just an intense routine. It's a different life. Does that help, Abigail?
It does, actually. I think it's very true. Because definitely, I mean, I think if you have a pattern, it's easy to change. because I've done it before. I did the same thing at university at home. My first year, I was up until all hours. And then my second year, I kind of got into going to bed at a half decent time and waking up earlier, like with my own biological clock, which was fun.
Exactly. And let's face it, we've all got our own biological clocks, our circadian rhythms. We should use them. Rory, anything you'd like to question Stephanie on in terms of sleep patterns? I mean, she is Channel 4's sleep doctor and she is our awesome sleep expert.
Yes, she is. So, hi, Stephanie. I've got a bit of a confession to make. I take a lot of naps during the day.
During seminars, as I've said. Yeah.
No, not during seminars.
No, exactly.
But I'd say I'd take a nap about probably once every other day. Is that healthy or not? I'm guessing no.
Well, actually, I would argue that everybody is different, okay? If you've got a sleep problem and you want to improve your sleep at night, then possibly the napping might not be helping that cycle. And so taking away the nap will sort of naturally build up a bit more sleepiness for you, which means for the first few nights, your body can sort of reset. It can give you a better quality at night because it knows you need sleep because you haven't dissipated it in a nap. But if you've had naps since you were little and they're part of your routine and your expectations of your night's sleep have always been the same and it's always been the same for you, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. I think with napping, it's just, it depends who you're talking to. If you had a rip-roaring sleep problem, then I would argue that potentially, in order to fix that at night, we would need to take the naps away, especially in the first instance, just so that we can really sort of condition your body into this, you know, fixing you. But at the end of the day, the odd nap isn't going to hurt you. It's really about managing your expectations. If you're happy with your sleep at night right now, and you're really happy having a little nap every now and again, that's great. But if you're thinking, do you know what, I really wish that I wasn't so sleepy in the day that I had to have this nap, then you can change it with your behaviour. But yeah, just feels a bit rubbish in the first instance.
Stephanie, I think you've just given me a lovely idea for a series. I would call it Rory's Rip-Roaring Sleeps. They can be sort of imaginative sort of visions that he actually goes on, and we can work on that premise. It's just got my... What do you think, Ellie?
I think that would be great. You could record people sleeping next to Rory.
Not sure about the ethics of that one.
Legal problems.
You don't necessarily want to have, you know, Rory saying, who the heck are you then, basically? I've
got a question for Stephanie. I've got a new app on my phone and it's called Pillow, and you lay it next to you on your pillow while you sleep, and then you get this graph when you wake up in the morning, and it tells you what your sleep pattern was, and it also records you while you're asleep. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because apparently I get about 50% good sleep a night, but I have no idea what this means.
Okay, I would argue that potentially it's not great, because even when you feel you've had a good night, it can potentially tell you've had a bad night. The accuracy of them, well, we don't use them to monitor you in a sleep study, for example. We will use much more extensive techniques.
That's a relief.
I think tracking in general, there's lots of information out there, like research coming out to show that real heavy tracking isn't good in any area of our lives. The people that can take it anecdotally, you know, okay, well, that happened. It's great. But if you're somebody who's literally using it to dictate your behavior, I feel like that's not going down the right road. We do have a problem at the moment in that people are becoming a little bit too obsessed with their sleep, because there is so much information out there at the moment. There's lots of trackers. There's lots of people trying to get on the sleep economy. And unfortunately, that is causing us to have more worries about our sleep. And we've actually labeled it as something called orthosomnia. So it's actually becoming a problem that we are looking too much into it. I would argue that actually we all could sleep before apps and technology, and we can do it again. You don't need these extra bits to help you sleep. And in actual fact, the research sometimes shows that it can make it worse, not better.
Here, Stephanie. Well said. That's why you constantly sort of featured as our sleep expert, because you tell it like it is. And let's face it, we've had lots of sort of sleep-based scenarios as far as the show is concerned. We continue regardless. That's the important thing. Emma, any thoughts you've got to share at this stage?
I listened to your podcast with Lucas Rockwood. I really enjoyed it.
Good.
I didn't realise that, I never really thought about it, about how important light was, especially because in the mornings I think I'm guilty of kind of laying in bed in the dark waiting to wake up.
Everybody does that. Yeah. Not another show. Not another day.
But yeah, I think... Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? It's ironic that we spend our time with all the lights on in the evenings and all the technology going, and we literally want to, I don't know, it's like an innate thing. We want to be awake and doing all the fun things. And in the morning, when we really need the light and we need it to help us improve our alertness and mood, we are actually sort of creeping around in the dark getting ready, which always I always find very ironic. And the fact that we see lying in as a luxury, I think we just made that up in society because we're all perpetually tired. And if we actually stopped them and we had more light, I wonder how many of us would actually be using our bodies the way they were designed, waking up literally just before the alarm, so not even using it, feeling refreshed when we're waking up, or at least feeling like we can start the day and not groggy. You know, so yeah, you raise a really good point. Definitely get more light in the mornings, especially in the UK. We just don't get enough light here.
And on that bombshell, I'm going to ask Rory to deliver those last two questions again, because I was very impressed with your last delivery. It was executed superbly, so take it away one more time.
So, Stephanie, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Always, absolutely.
And will you be joining us again?
Yes, absolutely. You'll have me.
Do you know, in many ways, I'm thinking James Newton Howard could have written this and called it the Richard Fitzwilliams theme as opposed to Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I think it's been all right.
Ellie? I mean, Richard always kind of produces so much interesting things. Some movies you hate, some movies you're never going to see, some movies you actually get in agreement with, really.
Yeah, yes, very often, he does tend to like the really deep ones, doesn't he?
Like The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Girl and the Spider's Web. I don't know. Richard.
I like these.
Are you going to respond to that? And I'll continue the introductions by saying also in the studio today, Richard, we have from Canada, Abigail LeMay. And,
hi.
Yeah, that was a silent hi. It was a slight delay. Time delay
Hello.
Over the Atlantic Ocean. Emma Street's back with us.
Hello.
Hello, Emma.
And Rory McGowan.
Slightly less exotic, but hello.
Hello.
I don't know. I mean, Bedfordshire's quite exotic, really.
Very far south.
I mean, Abigail, when you're over in Ontario, did you ever think, Lord, there's such wonderful names, Bedfordshire, what a wonderful place that is.
No, because I would actually mispronounce them. I always thought it was Lincolnshire.
It is, actually. It's just everybody else's.
Mom said, don't you dare go over there and say Lincolnshire. It's Lincolnshire.
Well, there you have it. Moving on, Richard, we won't get into pronunciation of counties, otherwise we could be here all day and don't get me started on Leicestershire. So would you like to share with us, which one do you want to go for? Shall I ask the team?
Well, no, I think I'll go for the girl in the spider's web. No, let's get Grindelwald over with. Let's get Grindelwald over
with. Make a decision!
Quite honestly, I'll change my mind simply because Fantastic Beasts, The Curse of Grindelwald, based on, obviously, J.K. Rowling and Money's script, and quite honestly, directed by David Yates, you'd expect something better. But I do have the confession, I wasn't a great Fantastic Beasts fan of the original, which made a lot of money. Now that, of course, is, surprise, surprise, precisely what this film is about. Remember our reviews a long time ago, The Hunger Games and The Hobbits. Remember also the shameless way these movies were milked for sequels. That is precisely, be warned, what this is doing. With a plot so complicated that I really, really wondered where I started, I simply ought to say that it begins in New York with the magical Congress transferring the dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald, played by Johnny Depp, from the prison to London to be tried for his crimes. He escapes, and subsequently Newt's commander is involved in fighting him, as is Albus Dumbledore, and there is a connection between Dumbledore, played by Jude Law, and I ought to mention Newt is still played by Eddie Redmayne, and what happens when they fight the rising force of, it's wizard fascism. Quite honestly, the problem with this movie is it is so complicated that, I mean, I actually did a draft of a sketch which I thought I'd mention, and then I thought, what the hell, I can't remember half these people, who played whom, who did what, where and when and how often. It's very noisy, it's got some rather fantastic beasts.
Richard, do they mumble? Do the beasts mumble?
Well, I don't think the beasts mumble, I think the beasts roar. The trouble, you mentioned mumble, there is a lot of noise in this movie.
Does it signify anything, or is it just signifying nothing?
Signifying very, very little. I rather liked a Chinese dragon, I'll have to admit it. And when, of course, Newt opens his case, you remember this from the first Fantastic Beasts, all sorts of strange things pop in.
Like
pop
Mary
out.
Poppins.
Yes, well, Mary Poppins, I'm looking forward to Mary Poppins returning. Lin-Manuel Miranda apparently may well get an Oscar nomination for his role in the infamous
Richard, for such a classic Potterhead as your good self, and I use the term in its true affection.
Yes, well, I like Harry Potter.
Exactly.
I'm very fond of it.
I'm quite shocked that I sense a weariness. Do you know, Ellie, do you sense a weariness about this?
I love Harry Potter. Yeah. I went into Primark yesterday, and it's
other shops are available.
There are, but Primark is absolutely full of Harry Potter. Hmm. And in fact, I'm planning to go back there today to buy a Harry Potter sweater.
Wow.
Harry Potter is exciting,
not
it's
Alex.
Colourful. I mean, I enjoy it, I do indeed. Fantastic Beasts is rather like a spin-off for Harry Potter, which is somehow...
They forgot the script, didn't they, Richard?
It's a prequel. It's all roads leading to the prequel.
No, but this, yes, for the prequel involving Dumbledore.
Yes.
And all sorts of, shall we say, no spoilers, Dumbledores... No, I won't say it.
No, don't say that.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness.
But, I mean, let us at least make the point that as far as this movie is concerned, it's perfectly harmless. It's set in the 1920s. There's quite a lot of good scenery in London, Paris.
You've got potentially the rise of fascism occurring. I mean, that's quite exciting.
Yes, it happened at that time. I didn't know, and now I've been reminded.
Oh, exactly. let's just open it up then. Rory, from what Richard's been saying, will you be checking out The Crimes of Grindelwald?
Oh, I don't know, because it seems to me like, obviously, Yates directed a bunch of Harry Potter movies beforehand,
yes,
and the previous Fantastic Beasts, and I was very interested, but if the script is weak, then I don't know.
Okay. Ben, I suspect...
Well, I mean, the point is it's not going to do any harm to anyone. I mean,
But neither do fluffy unicorns, Richard. But at the end of the day, do you want to spend your entire life filled with fluffy unicorns?
I was there with a packed audience where there were some very, very young children who seemed pretty rapt by it. When it comes to the human race and when it comes to Fantastic Beasts, I didn't think much of the first one. This one I tolerated.
Okay.
I mean, I accept that.
You've made your point. You should. Ben, would you be checking it out? I suspect no.
Well, I've only got up to the first four films of Harry Potter, I feel like I need to watch those before. I don't know, Richard, do you think that's... Is that the case, or do you think it's something you can watch if you haven't seen the rest of the Harry Potter films. Well,
no, I always say if you want to see it on the big screen. I mean, you've got to say that after all. I mean, we're dealing with movies.
We don't have to, as I said last week when we ended the show, basically, with respect to small screens and devices. Abigail, your views on Grindelwald, will you be checking it out, or is it a case of no?
I don't think I would go on my own accord. Like, maybe if it was on TV or something.
Yeah. Well, I must tell you, Abigail, that people aren't. I mean, they went to the first one, which I have to say I thought was a almost total waste of time, but there it is, if it's popular. You know, you've got to mark
these things. The first one was brilliant, Richard. I'm sorry, but I have to contest this view. I just don't know what's happening. And you're forgetting that our students, actually, I know I'm going on to Harry Potter, but our students from here at the University of Lincoln made the first Hippogriff. They actually did the animation.
Oh, well, I mean, with a connection like that, I mean, how could you possibly give it other than five
smashed
stars?
Out of the park there.
Yes,
precisely.
Thank you.
Emma.
Yeah, I want to go watch it.
Marvellous.
I liked the first one.
There you are. So, let's move on to what Her Majesty the Queen decided to do with respect to the girl in the spider's web. Oh, no, that's Claire Foy. She was in The Crown. I thought I was getting confused there, obviously.
Well, you certainly won't be confused. I mean, it's quite interesting because this is a brave challenge for Claire Foy to take on the challenging part of Lisbeth Salander. Because what we've seen in the previous movies, I thought, Noomi Rapace and Dora Parch and Rooney Mara, both absolutely excellent. And I mean, it's a very unusual and popular franchise. A heroine created by Stieg Larsson in the Millennium Trilogy. She's a computer hacker. She's traumatized as a child, and she takes revenge on male rapists and sadists on behalf of their abused victims. And we have Claire Foy. As you said, I mean, she's superb as the Queen and as Anne Boleyn. In roles that require sensitivity, that's, I think, the point when it comes to this role. There's not much in the tattooed dynamo that is Lisbeth. She's got a pedal force. And when it comes to Claire, I mean, I just didn't find her convincing. I am sorry to say this, because she's got a Swedish accent. She's...
Now, when you say Swedish accent, is this like a Swedish chef in the Muppets? Because obviously there are Swedish chefs
well,
and Swedish chefs.
I'm not being that unkind. I mean, the point is she does seem rather dumb and she's perpetually on a motorbike. I mean, the problem with the plot, a scientist, Franz Balder, played by Stephen Merchant, has a son, August, played by Christopher Convery, who happens to be a technological genius. He hires Elizabeth to steal his own work from the Americans because the work is the Firefall program, which involves accessing nuclear codes online. Therefore, you can achieve supreme world power. And Elizabeth is supported by her friend and lover, the journalist Mikael Bonquist, played by Sverre Gudnason. And there's several episodes in this that, quite honestly, are a bit nonsensical. There's one involving...
Sounds almost as good as Quantum of Solace to me, though, with that kind of world-dominating plot.
Well, you are looking at the same sort of level, quite honestly. Fede Alvarez directs without flair, directs without panache. I mean, the failure is no fault of those who set up the lighting and the sound. I mean, it has got quite a few shocks. There's a scene that could have come out of a Hannibal Lecter movie. The assassins aren't very nice people, you see, but the problem is Lisbeth's main problem is not the assassins. It's, as in my opinion, the script. And then, of course, she's got her sister. This is a tale of sibling rivalry because we get flashbacks of how Lisbeth left her sister Camilla, played by Sylvia Hooks, who was abused for years afterwards by her brute of a father and has become a psychopath.
But it can happen.
It can happen.
In the most apparently sane of families. But
this, unfortunately, is a mundane movie.
A mundane movie? Oh, Lord.
A mundane movie.
Oh, no! Okay, let's run the team around that. Abigail, Girl in the Spider's Web.
I think it sounds really interesting. I think I might actually see this one.
Well, there we are. So thumbs up for the delegate from Canada. Well done. Emma?
Well, I was really looking forward to it. But
now Richard's possibly rained on that parade.
Well, so was I.
Oh, no. Oh, well. Ellie?
No, I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old, Richard. But
no,
to me,
we don't do that on Midnight Drive.
No.
I just think that every film just is the same as every other film.
No.
It's the
what?
Plot. that we've seen 100 times, and I, you know, I envy these lovely young people around me who, for whom some
dear,
of this
dear,
is new.
No, 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 you mustn't spread cold water on other movies. I mean,
I just got him started now.
Oh, it's just awful. All films are awful nowadays. I just think back to that wonderful heyday of Jurassic Park. Was that 1984, Alex?
Well, no, that was 1993, Barely.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, 1984 was Ghostbusters.
Oh, who are you going to call?
Well,
you
exactly.
See, there you had game changers. There you had new movies that really, really were unique. Unique plots, unique scripts, unique kind of graphics.
Well, we know what the movies are, but I mean, the thing is, sometimes they're good. Usually, I try and pick the ones that I think are going to be either.
Richard, sometimes.
I'm not blaming you, Richard. Yeah, exactly. I'm not blaming you.
And bear
you.
In mind.
I'm not responsible. I mean, I don't think there's no trend one way or the other. Some weeks you get good ones, other weeks you get bad, other weeks you get a mix.
Richard, don't worry. Aquaman is coming to our rescue, I'm sure. And bear in mind that the Coen brothers, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, is an outrageously wonderful movie and a wonderful sort of reference on the Western, so on and so forth.
Well, that is very funny indeed.
Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to Richard, please? I haven't actually found out. Would you go and see The Girl in the Spider's Web?
As a creative writing student, I think I would check it out. It does seem rather interesting.
Nice. Ben?
If it's as good as Quantum Solace, then no, I don't want to waste my time.
No, there we are. Okay.
Or as bad as Quantum Solace.
It's very true. Time is getting on. We need to squeeze in a little touch of Ian Lennox and Rachel Teat before the news. So would you like to ask the last two questions, please? Rory?
So, Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, great fun.
And will you be coming back?
I will be returning, as Grindelwald will be returning, I'm afraid.
When people keep repeating that you'll never fall in love, when everybody keeps retreating but you can't seem to get enough, let my love open the door, let my love open the door, let my love open the door to your heart. When everything feels all over, when everybody seems unkind, I'll give you a four-leaf clover, take all the worry out of your mind, let my love open the door, let my love.
Natalie Imbruglio, let my love open the door. And Ian Lennox, I'm going to run something past you now for your critical awareness, because we're about to run one of those things called a competition here, as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is concerned. I know it's frightening, but what the heck. The prize winner will actually receive a signed copy of Armistice 100, the school's poetry collection, by three wonderful, wonderful individuals, one of whom, of course, is Jason Whittaker. But the question that we're going to put to the assembled team, actually not team, listener, wherever you happen to be, podcast or otherwise, is this. Are you ready for this, Ian?
Yes.
Don't answer, please, because obviously you would not be eligible, and I'd have to think of a whole routine. Okay, we need to know, what is the name of the current poet laureate? What is the name of the current poet laureate? Okay.
And that's quite challenging, because it changes.
Exactly.
Very soon.
Exactly. That's it. We want the current poet laureate. Do you think that's a fair enough question to receive a signed copy by, indeed, a poet laureate, and indeed Professor Jason Whittaker, and
MTS Delica, the Queen's Gold Medal winner for poetry.
Exactly. Do you think that's a suitable question?
Do I think it's a suitable question?
Yes.
Yes, it's perfectly fine. Yeah.
Excellent. That's what we like to see. So that's all you have to do then, basically, dear listener. Let us know the name of the current poet laureate. Send it to studio@sirenonline.co.uk. That's studio@sirenonline.co.uk. Mark it, of course, Armistice 100, if you can. And we'll sift through it. I think we'll have a deadline of 2 weeks. What do you say, Ali? 2 weeks to our podcast listeners?
That sounds really good. And it's a fantastic book. It was the result of a competition. We had 544 entries from schools across the UK. We chose the best 300. There are 9 winners in 3 age categories, and it is one of the most moving books I think I've ever read. Mm. Rory had a quick look earlier.
Did, very impressed.
Armistice 100, a collection of poems written by schoolchildren from across the United Kingdom, published by the University of Lincoln, and signed by three... And you can't buy a prize like this.
You just cannot, quite literally.
Really can't. You know, I mean, even if you're on the kind of salary that the Bet365 founder actually has, you couldn't buy this sort of... It's that kind of level, really. It's phenomenal.
And she can buy this whole studio.
I know.
She could probably buy the university.
No, we don't give any ideas.
Do you know how much she's on? In fact, we sat down and we worked out last night. £32,000 an hour.
Yeah. Well, I know, £2 million a month. I worked that out as well. Yeah. It's shocking.
£12 a second.
Ian will be asking for an increase on his salary checks for his contributions on Thursday, so I don't want to go down that route.
Can I ask Ian a question?
Of course.
Is that okay? Ian, we were just chatting in the studio, so it's me, Ellie, hi, and I'm with Alex and some lovely, lovely students, including a creative writing student, and none of them seem to have read Lord of the Rings. And I'm kind of horrified by the scene, and I wondered what you thought.
I have to join them. I haven't. I've seen all the films.
Oh, my God.
You know, there's a generation...
They're all so excited.
For some reason, there's a generation that seemed to grow up about 20-odd years ago. They all read, all the kids at that time read the books.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but if it's not on an app with PlayStation, it just has no meaning whatsoever. It just ceases to exist, surely.
I just don't get it.
Anyway.
When you're talking to a person who's just discovered Jane Austen, so...
Where was she hiding? Has she gone to Newcastle? Has she becoming a Toon Army supporter after all these years?
Yeah.
Wow, amazing. Okay, the other connection, Ian, regularly, apart from this past year, you'd be pleased to know, Abigail, that Ian makes the trek over the other side. He heads to Canada. So get the microphone just slightly more in front of you, good self, swing it round, because it's a chance of a genuine Canadian student to quiz a genuine Geordie, that is Ian Lennox, and writer, what his thoughts about Canada happened to be. Over to you, Abigail.
Yes, I'm so excited to hear that you're going to Canada. That's awesome.
I haven't been for about 3 years, actually, but I'm hoping to go once more before I get too old.
So, Abby, would you like to find out where he's been, what his thoughts of Canada are?
It's a wonderful country, I'm telling you that now.
Do you find it's very different from the UK?
Yes. It's like America with a smile on its face, really.
Whoa.
And it's got... the people are very pleasant.
Well, that's lost most of our American contributors at one fell swoop, basically. Canada.
You can see how big it is, but you don't realize how big it is until you go there, and it's extraordinary. And I mean, they think nothing of driving 150 miles to see somebody. And my niece has recently got a job. It's a thousand miles away from her mother's house, and that's not. It's like me in Newcastle going to work in Poe in France or something like that.
And whereabouts in Canada have you been checking out, Ian? When did you used to go?
In Edmonton, I used to. That's just where they lived. In Alberta, which is the oil and farming.
So compared
country.
To Ontario, we're talking quite a distance, really, aren't we?
Yes, I've never been to Edmonton. So.
When I was out there about 4 years ago, and one of my friends, she was working out there doing some documentaries. And she said, let's meet up. And I said, you do realise you're 2,000 miles away, don't you?
But you're on the same planet.
The road goes up the west coast, I think, which goes straight on for hundreds and hundreds of miles through a forest, I think it is. And people have been knowing about mad at the other end. And it's just the vastness of it. I mean, I lived down by the Pyrenees for a while, and the France-Spain border, and they're like little teeth compared to the Rockies.
Yes, but remember, the Pyrenees actually is home to Lourdes, and that's a miracle in itself. So, you have to work on that on a primary basis. It's all great stuff.
Yeah. It's a wonderful, wonderful country, and the scenery is stunning, absolutely stunning. Yeah. And also, the summers, you can almost guarantee 4 or 5 months of really lovely weather. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can guarantee some rather deep snow in the winter as well, but...
Well, there we are. So, she's that bad. And from your own point of view, Abigail, any thoughts that you'd like? Because have you made your way to Newcastle upon Tyne, or is that on the attention of the case of no? I'm going to stay in Lincoln.
Well, really, I had big plans to go and travel England and make it down to London and Southampton and across the Wash and everywhere. But really, I've just been traveling across Europe. So I've been to Poland and Romania, and I leave today actually for Norway. But
There we are.
Just slip that into the conversation.
is that after the seminar or before? Oh, that is. That's good. Because, you know, strange as it may seem, I like to ensure that my students are actually there. You know,
midweek try on tour, by the
sounds. Exactly.
No, we're not going back.
Oh, right, sorry. You've got a representative. Yeah,
very sad.
It'll happen. Ian, the last two questions are going to be asked to you by Rory McGowan.
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Short but sweet, yes.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense. Pass the biscuits, please. There's 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe and put a frog down my back at the Carroll County Picture Show. And wasn't I talking to him after church last Sunday night? I'll have another piece of apple pie. You know it don't seem right. I saw him at the sawmill yesterday on Choctaw Ridge. And now you tell me Billy Joe's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Mama said to me, child, what's happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all morning and you haven't touched a single bite. That nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, dropped by today. Said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. Oh, by the way, he said he saw a girl that looked a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge. And she and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Yes, I did like Ian's particular line about Canada being like America, but with a smile on its face. We'll use that again. Ben, you are pretty much a regular on the programme, obviously. We're delighted to actually have you here. And it's fair to say that every so often we like to feature Alan Stevens. Yeah, I mean,
he can be
a challenge, can't he? He can be a bit of a challenge every
so often. I don't have any interest in Doctor Who.
Exactly. So for her first ever debut as far as radio broadcasting in the Siren Southside Valley was concerned, of course, we set up Alan Stevens with Rachel Teat, and they got very well, like house on fire. To the extent that I then received an email from Rachel saying, hi Alex, you ended up in my junk folder. It's just, you know what, all that.
You've been sidelined, I've been, Alex.
Clearly, Rachel Teat, good morning, how are you? Voiceover actress and soul who's been in Wolf's Blood, Hollyoaks, and so much more. How are you?
I am good, thank you, and I apologise about my junk folder. You just happened to pop in there, but at least I kept it.
There you are. Now, it's fair to say we're talking about a whole variety of other bits and pieces, including rose-tinted social media after the news, where we talk with evolutionary anthropologist, writer and broadcaster Dr. Anna Machin. But before we get to that, Rachel, would you like to ask the head of communications at the University of Lincoln, communications and marketing development director extraordinaire, Ellie Sample, what exciting things Professor Carenza-Lewis, yes, that one from Time Team, and other things are going on both this very day and in the future. Rachel, that's your cue. Quiz away, please.
Oh, quiz away, all about... Say that again, the language pudding.
Just go ask Ellie what's going on at the university, that'll be fine.
Tell me what's going on.
Rachel, that's really sweet of you to be so interested. And,
I thought so. Exactly. You know, it just shows Teesside have interest in Lincoln as well. It's phenomenal.
It does. I wish you were coming. I do wish you were coming, and that would be great if you decide to come to the University of Lincoln. But if you were here in Lincoln today, you could see Professor Carenza-Lewis from Time Team, as Alex correctly tells us.
And the Midweek Drive.
And the Midweek Drive, yes. She often is digging up dead Romans or...
What are you saying about the show, Ali? You know, please.
Yeah, on the Midweek Drive. But today is her inaugural lecture, and that's at 5:30 in the Jackson Letch Theatre here, and that's all about archaeology, if anyone's interested. And then coming up on the 28th of November, we've got... a postgraduate taste today, and that evening we've got Diane Lees from the Imperial War Museums and also our Chair of Governors, who will be giving a talk on her career, which should be immensely interesting. And we've got a fantastic open day on the 1st of December. Coming next year, we've got Andrew Graham Dixon, Jason Bradbury, Chris Packham, Tom Heap, Gerald Scarfe, and Carol Ann Duffy coming to do some talks. So if anyone's interested, keep an eye on the website and find out more.
And the strangest thing I've seen, one of those names is actually the answer to the quiz question that we were putting together earlier, really.
I slipped in there.
No, it's just it's one of those names. I mean, you know, so if you put down Professor Carenza-Lewis as the Poet Laureate, who knows, you could be in with a chance.
You might not.
Then again, you might not. Rachel, this week you have been extraordinarily busy as a graduate of the University of Northumbria, would be really, doing a whole variety of things, including four different voice sessions and some medical role play.
Indeed.
Now, I mean, Emma, when you mention medical role play, that's got to be a must for all public relations folk, etc. So what's the medical role play entail, please?
Well, it's a student from Newcastle University, and they've been, it was the pharmacy students this time, so I do all sorts of different ones, from GP selection for the NHS to students and OSCEs and all their exams. So they get a team of actors who are role-playing certain medical ailments, and they've got to work out how they would treat them, and then we have to give feedback about how they performed and what they did. And this was in second years, and this was all about the respiratory system, and I was a very naughty role player who had not been taking my inhalers correctly, which was the main problem, really. And had I have been, I would have been absolutely fine. But instead, I was relying on my blue inhaler instead of the brown one.
That's almost pretty much a story for life, really. If you need your inhalers, for goodness sake, use them. Otherwise, what's the point, really? Ellie, you're perusing Rachel's CV there and resume from, of course, the Spotlight Casting Directory. Anything that springs to mind?
Wow. I mean, just what... amazingly talented woman who's...
That's why she's on the show, let's face it. Much like yourself, really.
Gosh, aren't we lucky to have a real superstar on the line. I mean, it's super. I mean, what was your favourite role to play, Rachel?
My favourite role was Father Brown. I absolutely loved it. We filmed in the Cotswolds, which for a start was absolutely stunning. And I was a nurse who was really gobby, so of course... died first.
A gobby Teesside nurse? I can't believe such things would exist, really.
Was that when you were Peggy Fletcher?
It was, yeah. But I got stabbed in the heart with a scalpel. So all of the kind of prosthetics and things. And
brilliant.
We also had a historian, a medical historian there, teaching us about how everything should be done correctly, which I just found absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And it was just a brilliant show to work on. And it was lovely, and I did, yeah, I was really gusty, but they did, because I look a lot younger than I am, they all thought that it was my first
She's
job.
Actually 97.
I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah, it's almost, I feel like...
Yeah, it's been centenary soon.
I feel
Rachel.
A bit depressed, because I'm a lot younger than I actually look, so I'm like the opposite.
Nonsense. Remember, we're chronologically gifted in our own wonderful
Whereas
ways.
Whereas Rachel is both beautiful and... looks older than, no, younger than she is.
Well, much like yourself, Emma and Abigail, obviously, from that point of view. I mean, Rory, Ben and myself, clearly we're just haggard individuals now, speaking of myself.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, exactly. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, age, it's a strange.
I think those pictures
on there could be heavily edited.
Well, but We've got a thought in the office, and we want your view. We think that Rory could be a fantastic voiceover artist, and I'm going to ask him to do his voiceover and get your view on it, Rachel.
With those last two questions, perhaps?
Well, can he not do his...
In the last two questions? Do your thing, Rory, please.
My thing? Well, do you want me to do the last two questions?
Yeah, we'll do that as well, but do your thing first.
Okay. Here we go. The epic announcer for most trailers just... In a world conquered by fear, one man will stand alone. There we go, that's all I'm doing. That's all you're getting so far.
Sounds a bit like one of those Burger King adverts.
I don't know whether to be flattered or very offended right now.
Other fast food chains are available. Rory, go with our two questions, please.
So I can't do the voice again.
No,
sorry.
No, just
that was a one-off treat for the breakfast show. Yeah. So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed. It's been most interesting. It's the most people I think I've spoken to at once on a telephone link.
Oh, well, that's brilliant.
That is a surprise.
Yes, and will you be joining us again sometime soon?
I will on Sunday morning, I believe. I'm going to be joining Alex in the studio.
Well, there we are. Ooh, different studio, different location, but it's all right. It's very confusing. That sort of thing. It'll happen. Someday she might even come to Lincoln. Well, no, it's very, very scary, but it will actually happen, I'm sure. Anyway, still to come, as we've mentioned, rose-tinted social media. We've got Christine Webber talking about In Honour Bound, which is outrageously wonderful text described by Joe Good, BBC presenter, as a demonstration of the humiliating agony of heartache in the media goldfish bowl. I know, we've all been there. Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm just sort of having a hallucination once again. Stay tuned to the Drink Time Morning Edition. We'll renew the competition as well. We'll find out more from Ellie, more from Abigail, more from Emma, more from Ben, more from Rory, and more from life in general. Excellent. And the weather today, highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a thick, cloudy day with a gentle breeze. Now, rose-tinted social media. Is social media killing our perceptions of real love? Apparently, the majority of British folk feel that social media, television and film give people unrealistic expectations of love. We'll find out what our studio team think of that in a few seconds. But who better initially to talk about this particular study, which demonstrates that in the East Midlands, over half of those in a relationship and over two-thirds of singles feel that social media, TV and film gives people unrealistic expectations of what a relationship should be like. Well, we speak to Dr. Anna Machin, evolutionary anthropologist, writer and broadcaster extraordinaire. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning.
And also from the wonderful world of a dating expert, the dating writer of the year at the 2017 UK Dating Awards, Kate Taylor. How are you, Kate?
Hello.
Kate, let's talk us through your own experience of this particular survey. Is it a case of, yeah, actually, you know, social media, we're changing things, we're adjusting them, and life isn't quite like what it seems to be in the virtual sense?
Well, this is a new study by the dating site Match.com, who really want to know how people in the UK feel about social media and the kind of unrealistic expectations that seeing everyone's perfect looking relationship is putting us on us all. And we found that a third of both singles and couples feel disillusioned by images of perfect relationships, and also that when you're looking at someone else's relationship, if you're single at the moment, you're more likely to feel discouraged and like it won't happen to you. So instead of being inspiring, it can actually be putting you off.
Oh, no. From an evolutionary point of view, I mean, clearly I'm used to the notion of alpha males and the dominant sort of system of that, but that's all changed these days, I suppose, Anna, in the 21st century, where do we have to have whole new strategies to propagate the species?
Gosh. Well, actually, interestingly, we don't. don't. So obviously we're now in a world where we've got equality or near equality between the sexes. And in the old days, yes, you needed your man to go to work and earn the money to keep in the lifestyle to which you wanted to become accustomed. But now obviously women go out and do that themselves. But interestingly, when we look at how particularly very successful women look for mates, they're still actually doing it in the old-fashioned way. So evolution takes a little bit of time to catch up. So there's still the same rules of dating apply.
OK, let's open it up to the studio. Let's go to Emma first. Emma, I mean, you've possibly had a chance to have a little perusal through this bits and pieces. Any thoughts on this as a young woman who's obviously heading to huge success when you graduate with the University of Lincoln behind you?
Thank you. I thought it was quite surprising that it was more likely to be men that posted on social media about their relationships, because, I mean, it's probably quite sexist of me, but I did assume it'd be women that use social media to post on. So that was quite surprising.
We thought that was really interesting as well. It is. It's men who are sharing all the images of themselves and their new partner and regularly updating their statuses with news of the relationship, which I guess is wonderful.
It's because we're insecure. It's the male ego. it's the fragility of the male ego. The very fact that some poor soul female has actually taken pity on us. We just can't cope anymore. It's just the thrill of the whole thing.
Trying to say, I think, is that you're really proud that your relationship is happy.
Or is it notches on a bedpost? The new way of having notches on a bedpost.
Well, absolutely.
Look at
absolutely.
Me. Look at my virility.
I mean, from an evolutionary point of view, actually, what these men are probably doing is displaying, going, look, guys, look who I can get. Therefore, I'm, you know, much more successful, much higher up the hierarchy than you. And also, obviously, if they then split up and have to change that status, then it's really them going, way, I'm back on the market, ladies.
And I think that gives women as well something else to worry about now. Because I've been married for 5 years and my husband hasn't got a social media account at all anywhere. So shouldn't he have opened one just so he could share our
women? Well, this is one of the things where social media and relationships causes conflict in relationships. We know that if there's a mismatch between the members of a couple in how much they post online. So if you've got one person who's posting all the time and gushing about love and the other one doesn't really, then that itself causes conflict because they start worrying that maybe the other one's not quite so into the relationship.
And then you try and pull back and...
You do, and then, oof.
And with in a new relationship as well, when you're trawling through all their posts, yes. You accidentally like something that they posted 6 years ago, and you're like, no, it's going to know.
Okay, let's bring a couple of our male co-presenters in this morning. I mean, Rory, does this resonate with your own routine? Is it a case of, yes, I'm like a peacock in a new relationship? Everybody needs to know.
Well, if I had a relationship, well, that's a good start. I don't know if I would post it on social media.
No.
To be honest, I'm not too much of a bragger unless it comes to voiceovers.
Well, there we are.
But
focused on your career, Rory.
Yes,
that's how
yes, it's always
that's
career
matters.
First. Yeah. No, bragging seems to me like a very, as you said, Alex, very egotistical kind of. I don't know.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay, Ben.
Yeah, well, I'm in one, but we
no. Thanks, Ben. Yeah.
What are you in? are you bragging about?
No, I don't. We in fact, it was one of the first things we agreed was the fact that
no social media.
Yeah, we just thought we want to keep. I mean, for us anyway, we want to keep it private, but we don't want to. We don't have time to throw all out there. And even then, I feel like. I mean, for us personally, we just focus on ourselves. We don't look to what other people are doing. It's up to what other people choose to do. But I think for me, I think the problem is, I think people aren't realistically post things about their relationships at times and sometimes make it look like it's a big glorious thing when actually it's far from it. And then a week later, you see that they're no longer together kind of thing.
Well, interestingly, the data that we've got from other studies shows that people tend to post about their relationship more when they're actually in a bad place in the relationship. In a way, it's kind of like trying to shore it up in public, and hopefully that'll become true in private. So actually, quite often when you're seeing those lovey-dovey posts, actually what they're saying is they had a massive argument this morning.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, for me personally, it's not something we tend to do. We keep it quite private, if anything. And
okay, Ben, you've spoken enough about it now. Thank you very much.
Yes. I'm now coming into the bragging stage.
I think there's a slight tendency to do it in an anonymous sort of way. It's a reverse routine. Anna, where can people go to find out further details about this whole survey and so on?
Well, there's actually a dedicated website at match.com/lovewithnofilter. And if you happen to be in London next week, there's a pop-up event in Shoreditch called #lovewithnofilter, where Kate and I will be giving talks on social media and love, and Kate will be giving some dating tips, and I'll just be talking you through a little bit of the science behind love and why actually our individual experiences of love are completely unique to us, so there's no point comparing yourself.
Well, I mean, exactly, because we're all unique people. Ellie, you've got something else to add.
But if you're not that worried and you want to focus on your career, then we've got an open day here in the and you can just focus on you.
Wow. You see, this Anna and Kate is clearly the director of communications, always on message as far as the University of Lincoln is concerned. It's genius stuff.
Was there a segue? I didn't notice a segue.
It was phenomenal, but I know
you were taught that you needed one.
Exactly.
Of course, but you don't.
Dr. Anna Machin and Kate Taylor, many thanks for joining us today. Have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us? Has it been okay for you?
Absolutely, it's been brilliant.
I loved it every minute.
Well, exactly, in which case we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
One of those nights when you turn out the lights and you sit in the dark and say to yourself, I miss her. It's one of those moods when your body broods and you conjure up her picture and you kiss her. It's one of those things for the pain it brings. You say to yourself, hey, couldn't I live without it? Well, I think so. On the other hand, I doubt it. Well, suddenly she's crashing through my mind like waves upon the shore. And I nod my head, whoa, yes, love, I'd welcome you again if you knocked upon my door. If you did not seek you out, love, I'd track you down for sure, like a thousand times before. Like you know I've done before. Yes, love, you know I did before. Yes, love, you know I did before. It's a pain in the neck. It'll make you a wreck if you get ya. It's so insane, cause through all the rain, when you ask yourself, could you do it again? You betcha. I hear a voice say, you got no chance, and it makes me mad. And I shout, oh yeah, who says so? Well, of course not. On the other hand, I guess so. Crashing through my mind like waves upon the shore. And I nod my head, whoa, yes, love, I'd welcome you again if you knocked upon my door. If you did not seek you out, love, I'd track you down for sure, like a thousand times before. Whoa, yes, love, I'd welcome you again, like you know I did before.
Which is presumably what Helen would do with Ahmed. Ahmed and Helen. It's such a name, such a wonderful lineup, and so on, so is. And I obviously took with great excitement the joys of the latest text and production from Christine Webber in Honor Band, to the extent, Ellie, that I actually decided to write a review on Amazon. Would you like to? And that wonderful,
that's
sort of
fabulous.
Jeff
that's
Bezos.
Really
sir.
Good.
I did. Would you like to hear what I actually said?
I would really like to hear what you said. Actually.
I think it went as follows: written with style and panache, the narrative unfolds at a brisk and purposeful pace. Although I found the characters frustratingly locked in self-made purgatories, the universal themes of romantic obsession and their accompanying agonies and joys are well delivered and represent a tale of doomed romance in a painfully traumatic but fascinating tale. A sequel focusing on Helen's adventures in broadcasting would be welcome.
So it was upbeat.
Gave it 5 stars. Extraordinary. Christine Webber. I don't know whether she might have put the phone down now. She might say, well, that's outrageous. I'm never coming on the show again after that. You completely missed the point. Christine Webber, the creator of In Honor Band. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I've missed you. And thank you for that wonderful review. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Well,
yes, it is a bit. You're right in a way that when people are going through absolute torment in a relationship, it is a bit self-imposed, isn't it? You know, I think maybe we all enjoy the drama a little bit. But, you know, we just act with what we're able to do at the time. I think that's what you have to say.
Looking back over the whole experience, the first thing that crossed my mind was, did you model at all one of the characters on Princess Diana's favourite heart surgeon? Because I had a feeling that might have had some sort of element in there. Did that creep in at all?
No, but I think there were a lot of Middle Eastern heart surgeons around at that time, probably mm-hmm. still are. And I decided to have him come from Egypt only because that was the only country in that area of the world that I had ever visited myself. So I did know something about it, which I thought might help. So,
well, I've got to be honest, I would have hit him several times, actually. In fact, none of the males, if I'm being brutally honest, I think I sympathised with at all. I mean, Jeremy, waste of space. Frederick, hopeless. Ahmed, you know, when you sort of just have no sympathy whatsoever, they get it together. And you almost wanted to a certain extent, when you're reading it, and clearly this is from a male perspective, and I'm reading the narrative from Helen, the main female protagonist, it's like red alert signals, everything, get out of there, girl, get out of there as soon as you can. It's just madness.
Well, you know, it's very funny because I think that is a very male response to that book, actually. But I think also what you have to remember is, you know, it is set back in the early to mid 80s. Mm-hmm. And things were different. And I think that from the perspective of women at that time, although they were still very much career women, I don't think they had the confidence that career women have 30 years on. I just don't think they do. And I think it was still very much expected by your family and everything that you would make a good marriage and, you know, bring home the grandchildren and all of those things. I mean, in lots of families, it still is true. Yeah. But I think it was much more true, Alex, honestly. Say 34 years ago, I think that was much more true.
I don't know. I mean, I think we've had this discussion before, Christine, where in terms of the biography of a good seller, Christine Webber originally trained as an opera singer, but had to rethink her career plans when her voice professor told her, your voice is okay, but your legs are very much better. That's hashtag me too, isn't it? I mean, you know, whoa!
I mean,
dream of saying that.
Well, Alex, you know, we're now going back and talking about something like 1967.
Oh,
so, you know, we're talking about the dark ages here.
And Alex, your legs aren't that good.
Thank you. Okay. That's not what Angela Rippon wants to tell me. Anyway, let's move on. Ellie, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to the awesome Christine Webber, particularly about her time doing interviews with lion tamers, which apparently are factually correct, which is why I think more adventures of Helen the broadcaster are indeed having knives thrown at her. Did you do the knives as well, by the way, Christine?
Yeah, I did the lion tamer. I did the Mr. Danger from Denmark. He wasn't called that.
From Denmark.
Yeah,
it's like Rory's dreams.
I did do that interview with this man piercing himself all over to the accompaniment of the Ride of the Valkyries, and I did feel absolutely sick. And afterwards, my boss did say to me, oh my God, that's the best television I've ever seen, but it was so awful, I can't ever put it out. So, you know, I put myself all the way through. So that was absolutely almost word for word what happened there, yeah.
It's strange that in these days of reality television and indeed the joys of Holly Willoughby in the jungle, we haven't actually got, you know, the Ride of the Valkyries to actually sort of have accompanying to somebody piercing themselves live on camera. So.
I do have a question, though. I have a question as a writer. Which character from fiction would you most like to marry?
Ooh, no.
Yeah. Weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
On the East Coast.
You're a romantic author, exactly. And I do love my fiction. And there's a few men from fiction who I'd quite like to have married.
Well, I suppose the first one that came into my mind, because I've always liked challenges, would be Mr. Darcy.
Oh, yes. We all wanted to marry Mr. Darcy.
Are you sure? Why don't you say Colin Firth? I mean, you know, I'm sure.
No,
he's...
No, 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 no.
Thankfully,
no.
He's not...
Laurence Olivier.
So.
Yeah. Laurence Olivier as Mr. Darcy, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely, lovely. Somebody like that. I don't like people who are a sort of walkover. Do you know what I mean? I like them to be very intelligent, and I like to feel I really need to step up to this one. Do you know what I mean? I think otherwise, I think that you would get bored.
Oh gosh, yes. You see, I always like the idea of Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, but none of my studio colleagues here, none of my students, none of these creative writing students have read Lord of the Rings.
Oh, well, I have to say that I was force-fed The Hobbit at school. I hated every moment of it, and I've never read Lord of the Rings, and I don't read anything with Wigmaliaries, witches, wizards. I think there's quite enough good literature with real people, and that's what I prefer.
It's not good if there's not a unicorn. It's just not good literature if there's no unicorn.
Funny enough, Ellie, I must admit, it would have got 5 stars plus if Christine could have worked in a unicorn into In Honor Bound.
I thought when the character goes off to Egypt,
maybe there could be a unicorn there, but no.
Yeah. I'm told there's a lot of them in Egypt. It's just I forgot to put them in, so, yeah.
Oh. Well, maybe that's where the Sphinx sort of, maybe...
Came out from.
There's a lot in ancient Egypt.
I'm sure, exactly.
I'd be surprised if there weren't unicorns.
I'll put it in the next novel, then. Nice. I'll make a change of plan.
Thank you, Christine.
Well, yeah, I've got to say, I was very impressed with the fact that Christine, even the consummate professional, decided to go to a friend's house to actually take this call because the hotel she's staying in is undergoing decorations and renovations. So
they're putting a lift in, I think. Long overdue, by the way. Yes, but it's not conducive to a quiet broadcast,
It's the joys of the Norfolk coast. Let's open it up a wee bit. Emma, have you had a chance to access Christine's work and so on? Any questions that you'd like to put to her?
I've actually got a question about this book, In Honor Bound. Because I find it quite interesting that obviously you've revisited your work and everything. Was that quite a difficult experience? Because surely you have to be fairly critical of what you've done in the past.
Well, Emma, you're right. It was quite a difficult task. But there were two reasons for doing it. One is that when I wrote it and it came out, it was published by Century in 1987. I was a television presenter myself then. It was the best I could do at the time because I'd never written anything before. And actually, I mean, I have no idea how I had the nerve to do it because I didn't know anything about writing at all. So it's sat on my bookshelves ever since. And then having written 15 non-fiction books and then branched back into fiction with another two more recently, you know, you learn, don't you, from every book that you write. And I used to think, I'd like to have another crack at that. And what happened was, because my husband was very seriously ill, I did have another book on the go, but I felt that I wasn't in a good enough place to write that other book. And then I thought this would be the time to rewrite In Honor Bound, because the story's there. It's just I would like to write it rather better. And so, I did. But I tell you what, it was very emotional. I cried when I wrote it, quite a lot, you know, at her pain sort of thing, which I certainly didn't when I wrote it the first time around. But I think it was because I finished it after my husband died, and I think in a way it was a sort of bit of a cathartic release, really. Instead of crying about myself, I was sort of crying about Helen, if that makes any sense at all.
Personally, I think she should never have started watching the Jane Fonda videos. I think that's where the rot set in.
Darling, we all used to do that. Oh, my God. And we used to go to aerobics classes where they encourage you almost to hurt yourself. Oh. I mean, they were madness, Alex, honestly. Oh. But you're too young to remember that, I know.
I was around in the 80s, 1880s. It was a very sort of fashionable time for the late Victorians, as I recall. Rory, as a joint journalism and creative writing student, any thoughts from yourself? Have you ever considered working some romance into the whole sequence for your narratives and so on?
Well, actually, I'm writing a draft of a book right now. I've been writing kind of books and that kind of thing since I was 15, so I do have a question. What do you do when you, like, write? Do you listen to music? Do you have to write in silence, kind of?
Watch Jane Fonda videos.
Yeah, well, is there kind of a routine or a ritual that you do?
Yes, I never, ever write without having music on. And what tends to happen is if I'm writing through the day, it's always sort of a kind of the classical variety because that was my training. But, interestingly, because I did train as an opera singer and was a hopeless one, I can't listen to singing. I can't listen to anything with words.
No, agreed. But,
you know, because they do distract you, don't they? So I listen. I tend to start off with something, a little bit of Mozart in the morning, and I progress through the kind of centuries. But maybe by the afternoon, I'm doing Richard Strauss, and then in the evening, if I'm still writing, a little light jazz usually suits me quite well. You know, a bit of piano jazz or something. So yeah, I work kind of chronologically through the day. Although I mean, the book obviously is not going chronologically, but it's just something I do. I start with a Mozart. I always think a bit of Mozart first thing. That sets you up for the day.
Well, there we are. Perfection. Ben, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, what were the kind of the biggest inspirations for you starting to write in the first place? You know, what was kind of your kickstart to that?
Yeah. Well, I think like lots of people, you know, I loved writing at school. I used to write plays at school that sometimes got put on. They always had a part in them for me, of course. I used to write stories and everything, and then grown up life kind of intervenes, doesn't it? And it's hard. But then when I got into television, I started writing my own scripts, and I used to produce and present features within the news program, because that's what happened in those days before the sort of, you know, all the channels we have now and all the daytime that we have now. So a 6 o'clock news program in those days used to have news and weather at the beginning and then lots of features, you know, a medical feature, a social action feature, whatever. And I used to write my own scripts. And I think that made me think, you know, maybe I could write a novel, maybe I could. And then I went to a workshop, actually, run by Cosmopolitan magazine in London, had the most fantastic lineup of guests. Maya Angelou, Margaret
Drabble, Claire Boland, yes. Faye Weldon, Angela Carter.
Read that bit. Yes, well, I mean, it was fantastic. And I came home and thought, I am going to write that book. And then they ran a competition to find the best first novel, which I did not win. But the publisher actually quite liked it and, with some changes, did publish it. And that's the history of how that happened.
Awesome. Christine, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you yourself. We haven't quite finished because we have our Canadian undergraduate exchange student who's off to Norway later on today. I know, it's so international these days.
Oh, my goodness.
Abigail, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Christine?
I do, actually. I'm just curious if you have any advice for somebody who has writer's block.
Yes. It's a very tough thing, actually, but I think that get exercise. You know, go walking, or preferably if you can find a beach. I think that's always very evocative. I also think watching a complicated drama on television can often kickstart something. Go to the theatre as much as you possibly can. Read other people's novels. Try and work that into every day. And I think, and also as a person, be very curious. You might say nosy about other people. So, you know, on buses, keep your eyes and ears open. You know, just file away little things that people say. And sometimes you get a writer's block about one particular bit of work, and you get a brilliant idea about something else, and it's quite handy to just start the other thing. And it somehow clears the channels, and you can often go back to the bit that you were blocked over.
That's good advice. Thank you.
And using the 21st century mode of communication that we refer to as social media, Christine, which clearly Helen would find a whole new world. I mean, heaven only knows what her kind of anxieties would have been. And not just that, but also, Ahmed, can you imagine? I love you more than anything else. I love you more than anything else. Just shut up, man. Just do the decent.
You really don't like him, do you?
I'm sorry. But, I mean, it got to the stage, you're halfway through, I'm thinking, how am I supposed to actually face Christine Weber? But anyway, turned it around in the end.
Thank you very much.
Don't get me started on Jeremy, as I say, because that's another line in time. I mean, just pop it, and just have to come in. You know, of course you did. Have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Christine Weber?
As ever, this has been a riot from start to finish, and wonderful. So thank you very much indeed.
And will you be back again with us very soon?
Well, I hope you're going to invite me.
Of course. Round of applause for Christine Weber, please. And actually, how can people get in touch with you, Christine? Are you on the Facebooks and the other
bits and pieces? I'm on Facebook, yeah. I'm on Twitter, at one Chris Webber, and I've got a website, ChristineWebber.com.
Fantastic. And I hear Wolfgang is very impressed with it as well.
Oh, well, there's my mate. Thank you.
It was Wizard, I believe, who had the hit, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, and it would seem that on average each British person will spend 882 hours of their adult life Christmas shopping, also listening to over 1,000 hours of festive music, attending 126 Christmas parties, and consuming 504 mince pies in a lifetime. To address some of the magic of Christmas, who better than the person who clearly will have the honour of being everybody's favourite Christmas guest in any way, shape or form? It's the awesomely talented Helen Skelton. How are you, Helen?
Oh, you say that, but I haven't had one invite for Christmas dinner.
No! Please. I mean, this is... These sort of... To launch with that shocker, Helen, is just outrageous. I mean, I can...
Apparently I've got to cook my own.
What can we say? Still, never mind. Breathe and all will be well. Share with us, Helen, this particular aspect of the Feast of Saturnalia, as used to be before it was changed and converted and became a whole different sort of Christmas package. What is it? Is it just a case of it's the winter solstice? We all go crazy. We like our mince pies.
Well, there's that, and there's a lot of other things as well. I think whatever your interpretation of Christmas is, it is an opportunity to take time out of normal schedules, normal life, and spend a bit of quality time together as a family, or spend a bit of quality time doing stuff that you don't normally have to do every single day. And in this kind of hectic, crazy, busy life schedule that we have at the minute, isn't that a good thing? You know, we do church on Christmas Eve, we do big family gathering on Christmas Day. That's what I was always brought up doing. And it's just a really nice time to kind of capture those moments and make those precious memories.
And there's a midnight mass, of course, although sometimes it's actually held slightly earlier in the evening, usually about 7 or 8 o'clock, who knows. This research was commissioned by Amazon, of course, to mark the launch of Gift Finder as part of the Christmas shop, and again, that notion that we spend 882 hours each, that's over 36 days, purchasing nigh on 1,400 presents across a lifetime. I know we're not into a numbers game, Helen, but that is quite phenomenal in terms of when you add all the things together.
I think that's just one. That's every year for me. It seems to get so hectic. But you know what? Part of the reason that Amazon have done this research is just to kind of say to everybody, it doesn't need to be that stressful. It doesn't need to be that hectic. You mentioned Christmas shopping, and my dad literally goes grey and his eyebrows kind of knot into an unrecognisable shape. But it does not need to be that bonkers. I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old. So, yes, I love to have a wander down the high street and look at the festive lights and all the rest of it, but I do all my shopping online. Couple of clicks, done. And, you know, this is the first year that I've been organised. I'm the person who bought their wedding dress 3 days before the wedding, so I am not organised. However, I have done 80% of my Christmas shopping online. Don't hate me for being that organised, but I just wanted to get it done so I can enjoy that run into the Christmas period, and I can be that person who goes for Christmas drinks and goes for Christmas parties. Because in other years, I'm the one who's always herring around last minute trying to find stuff, and I don't want to do that this year, so I'm just getting it done.
You are quite literally Mother Christmas. In terms of the, again, online material, I was fascinated to find out where people were purchasing their presents from and so on. People are buying 22 presents on average this Christmas. Those in Oxford apparently the most generous. Surely I thought it would be those in Cumbria would be the most generous, particularly Carlisle. But perhaps I was wrong there.
Oh, yes, no, we're very generous. There's just fewer of us.
Oh, yeah, good point. Sheffield, of course, purchasing on average 26 presents per person, and Manchester and Newcastle on Tyne, buying on average 25 gifts each. Whatever happened to the notion that it's the thought that counts, though?
Well, I think that is still the case. I mean, I don't think people need to go out and spend, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds, do they? It's just a little token, and I think it's just an opportunity to say thank you to people. I mean, you go all year, don't you, sort of doing what you need to do. I mean, I'm kind of thinking of my eldest, and he goes to a preschool, and I'll think, oh, yeah, do you know what? This is a chance where I can buy those people a little gift to just say, oh, thank you very much. I acknowledge what you do. I might not get the chance to take the time out every day to say thank you, but actually getting them a little gift at Christmas is a chance to do that. And I think we all need an opportunity to feel a little bit special. It doesn't matter what age you are. I mean, me and my husband always joke, oh, don't buy me a present, don't buy me a present. But really, if you don't buy me a present, I'll be going crazy. It's not about the hundreds of pounds extravagant gift. It's not for me. It's just the thought that counts, that you've actually gone and looked for something for that person and taken a bit of time and made a bit of energy. And that's what's quite good about this gift finder on Amazon, is that you can have a bit of time to browse around, you know, on your phone, on your tablet, whatever. You can have a little bit of time to look around, work out something that's right for that person, rather than just the sort of dash and grab that you get caught up and swept up in last minute in the shops, which we're all guilty of doing. How many times have you got back to the house with loads of stuff and thought, why did I buy that? But you've just kind of got sort of bullied into it because you panic, it's chaos in there, and you grab something and then you don't know why you did.
Amazon.co.uk/Christmas, or indeed Amazon.co.uk/gift finder, will help you from that particular perspective. Does this mean, Helen, that you'd say, I'll go completely online? I mean, you mentioned going to the shops there, because clearly we need to think about our high street cousins as well. If it's all online, we think, well, everything's virtual.
No, but I just think it's about, there's horses for courses and there's something for everybody. Like for me, I've got dozens of presents. I don't know. I've got more than 22 to buy. So I'll do most of it online, and then I can go down to the high street and you can have a little wander and you can face-to-face and engage. I think there's horses for courses. I can remember the times watching my mum struggle up the street to the, you know, to the car park with bags and bags of shopping sort of nipping into her arms. That's not fun. So, you know, you don't need to do it all in one place.
It's penance, Helen, it's penance. It's kind of that initial sort of advent sort of lineup from the whole process, a bit like Lent, but before Christmas as opposed to Easter. Helen, in terms of the ideal Christmas, have you got it all planned out? I mean, I can imagine the Skelton household, that literally everything, I mean, you've already said you've got the presents sorted out, etc. from that point of view. Is it going to be run like a military operation?
No, it's not military, it's chaos. But it is very twee Christmas. So if there is a novelty item that's going to sing Christmas tunes as soon as you walk through the door, my family will have it. If there's a ridiculous game to be played, my family will play it. They are those people. There's no calm sitting down watching Only Fools and Horses. It's literally from 8 o'clock in the morning, something ridiculous. A couple of years ago, before I had children, my mum and dad came down in fancy dress. One was a Christmas tree and one was a reindeer. I still don't really know why.
Well, of course, the gift that still is needs to be actually made and produced, Helen, I recommend it now, would be a DVD Tap Dancing with Helen Skelton. I think that's the line we need to actually look for from that point of view.
Well, it's funny you should say that. No, I'm joking.
We are, exactly. But again, in terms of awesome Christmas times, enjoy the whole festive season. Certainly watching the Instant Gardener is just awesome in its own way. Helen, have you had a reasonably interesting, and I won't say Christmassy because it's far too soon to start talking about that, really, but has it been okay for you this morning?
Oh, lovely time. Thank you very much for your company.
In which case, Helen, can we prevail upon you probably sometime in the new year to join us again? Will you return?
Of course.
Helen Skelton, we salute you. And happy holidays.
And to you.
Yes, keep it PC, that's the important thing. In case you're interested in listening to Santa Claus, there is an interview with Santa Claus that's actually going out this evening, between 7 and 8 on the programme, which is Royal Radio, because early...
Santa!
No.
We love him!
He even has a ho-ho-ho as well and gives you the genuine address that you need to use to contact him.
I can't believe he's not on this morning, Alex. I only came this morning because you said that Santa was coming.
He's just been delayed. He's had one or two reindeer challenges. Oh, so
And we paid a lot of money to get him. His time's quite valuable, I hear, this time of year.
He's a busy man, but he's got a lot of time, though. Santa creates time.
Are you sure?
He is on Royal Radio, and he will be on Siren Radio this evening between 7 and 8.
However, he is unable to have a list now because of GDPR rules.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, very good.
It's a definite thought. Thanks today to Gabriella Peralta, Stephanie Romashevsky, Richard Fitzwilliams, Helen Skelton, who we just heard, Ian Lennox, Rachel Teat, Dr. Anna Machin, and Kate Taylor, Christine Weber, and you, dear listener. And in the studio, of course, how has it been for you, Abigail LeMay?
It's been quite pleasant. I have had quite a lot of fun.
It's the best one ever.
Sorry, Abigail.
That's great.
The downer on your day.
Sorry, Carrie.
Can't wait to go to Norway.
I love that. So would you like
and
to go
I thought Canadians were happy, wasn't
that? I heard till they come on the radio.
Shane, we'll put you together with some more Canadians before you do, because you're off to Norway, but you're back with us and with us for a few more months, I gather.
Yes.
Excellent. So would you be interested in returning?
Yeah.
Good. That's another quite pleasant time. Rory, has it been quite pleasant for you, your first ever breakfast show?
Oh, absolutely pleasant, Alex. In fact, I go so far to say it's been enjoyable.
Whoa.
Being ratcheted up here. Emma, where do you sit? Oh, yeah, is it enjoyable, pleasant, fills the time, whatever?
Somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle. Because you will be joining the team, hopefully with Royal Radio, in the very near future to start reviewing Christmas shows and so on. Next week, of course, it's the Food and Gift Fair as well that we'll be going off to the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair production, which is wonderful. Ben, okay for you?
Yeah.
And well, Ellie, has the 1 hour 40 minutes or so been of some use?
It's been fabulous, Alex. It's the best 1 hour and 40 minutes of my life ever, apart from Corinda Lewis's talk later on today at 6 p.m. at the University of Lincoln. But thanks to you, Alex, dear Alex, the best presenter ever.
please.
Sarcasm is non-witty skill for very unwitty people.
Sounding like a character in a Christine Weber book there for a moment. It's just ease it back from that thing. Of course, you can find out all sorts of things about the university, including guest speakers, by going to lincoln.ac.uk, presumably, Ellie. It's a website.
Yes, definitely. And keep your eye on the new speakers coming up for the new year. There's some really exciting people.
And a reminder, of course, that if you wish to get your hands on a copy of Armistice 100, free of charge, enter the competition. Competition, basically, which asks you for the name of the current poet laureate. That's all we need to know. Send the answer to studio@sirenonline.co.uk. We'll reveal the winning entry, whomever, in 2 weeks from now, but you've got about 320 hours to actually get it done. So if you're Santa, obviously you can have centuries really if you can control time, but we'll hear more about Santa this evening with Royal Radio and the pantomime special of Royal Radio and much more. To the team, thank you. We don't normally have a catchphrase on the morning, do we? Shall we just say happy Thanksgiving for the benefit of our North American USA listeners?
Obviously, yeah, whatever works.
In Canada it was in October, so very early, whatever. Okay, so 1, 2, 3.
Happy Thanksgiving!